Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Susan Yaki reporting. Kerry seeks Saudi support for Syrian ceasefire. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry sought Saudi Arabia's support today in strengthening a cessation of hostilities agreement between Syrian government forces and rebels ahead of broader talks on regional crises later this week. Kerry, trying to shore up support for the shaky ceasefire in Syria, met with Saudi King Salman, whose country has been a key supporter of rebels fighting to overthrow Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Five men are under arrest in Australia on terrorism-related charges. Police arrested them for attempting to sail to Indonesia and then travel on to join Islamist groups in Syria. George Brandis is the Australian Attorney General.
These people had been under surveillance for quite some time. That's the reason their passports were cancelled, because they had been under surveillance and their intentions to travel to the Middle East to engage in terrorist war fighting were known to the authorities.
The men included radical jihadist preacher Musa Sorrentino, who is facing a possible life sentence if convicted. They are scheduled to appear in a Queensland state court on Monday. Multinational forces fighting the Islamic extremists of Boko Haram arrested five of the group's leaders and freed dozens of captive women and children, according to Cameroon's government. Authorities reported that the raids targeting Boko Haram bases in the northern Madawaya forest earlier this month freed 28 children and at least 18 women. The news came as several West African leaders, the French president, and others are gathering at a summit in the Nigerian capital, Abuja. This is VOA News. Islamic State extremists have claimed responsibility for a suicide bomb attack on a state-run gas facility north of Baghdad today that killed 11 people and wounded 21 more. Suicide bomber exploded a car near the front gate of the gas production facility at around 6 a.m. local time. Following the explosion, another van carrying at least six more terrorists wearing explosive vests gained access to the facility. They were able to set fire to three of the facility's gas storage containers. Afghan security forces said today they have halted advances overnight by the Taliban on a key northern city and inflicted heavy casualties on the enemy. The fighting on the outskirts of Pul-e-Kumri erupted reportedly when the Taliban overran several villages and security outposts. Officials said security forces led successful counterattacks and the rebels retreated. The Afghan government is being criticized by rights activists and many Afghans for negotiating with the militant Hezbi Islami faction led by fugitive Afghan warlord Gulbuddin Hekmatyar. The 68-year-old former prime minister allegedly killed thousands of civilians in the 1990s. However, Afghan First Lady Rula Ghani has defended her husband's peace bid.
I want you to remember the age of all these people, the Mujahideen, the Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, and all this. These are now old people. They're ending their lives. If they want to come to Afghanistan and finish their lives where they were born, I think it's only the human way to say, okay, you come and put some conditions, you know. You don't do this, you don't do that, whatever.
The campaigns for and against Britain's European Union membership has intensified, with pro-EU Prime Minister David Cameron warning that a British EU exit will trigger economic recession. An anti-EU figurehead, Boris Johnson, saying the bloc's current structure is doomed to fail. He spoke about the upcoming vote on the issue.
Because if the negotiations have proved one thing absolutely clearly, it is that this EU has changed out of all recognition from what we signed up for. Those negotiations, those abortive negotiations, have proved that this thing is going in completely the wrong direction and that all our attempts at reform are hopeless unless we vote to leave on June the 23rd.
A Manchester United football match was cancelled after authorities discovered a suspect package in the team's stadium. They detonated it in a controlled explosion today. Tens of thousands of fans were ordered evacuated. I'm Susan Yaki in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
We expect that all the registration centers that will be polling stations for this year's general election have also opened for the inspection of the provisional roll.
The Electoral Commission of Zambia announces political parties can officially begin campaigning on Monday ahead of the August 11 general election.
We insisted that forces of law and order should have information on who was expelled and why was expelled. We took an assessment.
Equatorial Guinea and Gabon expel foreigners who do not have proper identification papers.
Those people who have already been put in prison, the five who were caught with the meat, they are charged.
And South Sudanese court is criticized for sentencing five men to 6 months in prison for illegal wildlife poaching. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Official campaigning for Zambia's August 11 presidential, parliamentary and local elections begins Monday, says the Electoral Commission of Zambia, ECZ. This as Electoral Commission Chairman Justice Esau Chulu launched the inspection of the provisional voter list. All participating political parties registered with the Electoral Commission are to monitor the verification phase. Priscilla Isaac, Director of Elections at the Electoral Commission of Zambia, told me during this process, prospective voters are required to verify their information in the provisional voter register before a final list is compiled for the elections.
The inspection of the provisional voters' roll was launched by the Commission Chairperson Justice Esau Chulu this morning here in Lusaka. And we expect that all the registration centers that will be polling stations for this year's general elections have also opened for the inspection of the provisional roll by voters in the respective constituencies.
How long will this process last?
This process will go on until the 21st of May. And we are not extending because at the conclusion of the exercise, we are having an audit undertaken of the voters' register before we finally certify it on the 31st of July.
Will some of these political parties be part of this verification or inspection process?
Yes, everybody is supposed to inspect. And there are some organizations that have asked for accreditation to enable them to sit in the registration centers to observe what is going on. So each and every person who registered as a voter, whether it was last year or during the 2005-2006 exercise, they are all expected to come and inspect their particulars to ensure that their individual particulars are correct and also to make sure that they've not been inadvertently omitted from the voters' roll. This is the last chance for people to make sure that they are on the voters' roll and correctly on the voters' roll.
How intensive was the education or the outreach program to ensure that prospective Zambian voters will be part of this process and make it a success?
Well, we had the date when we released the election timetable in February, so the public has been aware. And then during the course of this week, and in fact we had started the other week, we have been publicizing through the print and electronic media, community radio stations, and then we'll also have voter education awareness and mobile publicity in the districts just to remind individuals to inspect their particulars. And we've also asked the political parties and the civil society to help us with the sensitization.
Tomorrow, Monday, May 16th, is the official beginning of campaigning for the August 11 general election. What can you tell me about this?
Yes, the official campaign period for this year's election starts tomorrow. And all the political parties are aware that it starts tomorrow. And we've asked them as much as possible to submit their campaign programs to the local police and the local district election officer, so that at least when they apply for their, when they give their notification for when they're going to hold their rallies and public meetings, there can be proper coordination so that we minimize complaints of people not being allowed to assemble as they have asked because of possible clashes in, with the respective party programs.
We heard initially two groups have proposed the same venue to begin a meeting on the 14th, which was outside the stipulations of the election calendar. How was this resolved?
As a commission, we advised them not to, and they heeded to our advice. And so everybody will be starting on the 16th. And so we are grateful that they took heed of our advice.
What will be the Electoral Commission's message to the people of Zambia about inspecting their particulars in this window that the Electoral Commission has provided for them in order for them to be able to vote come August 11?
Well, our appeal is that people should turn up in numbers to and take the time and the trouble to go and inspect the provisional voters register. Because this is to avoid unnecessary inconveniences on poll day, where maybe you may find that you've been inadvertently been omitted or that there are some mistakes in your particulars. But that is not to to say that we have taken care to ensure that particulars are correct and that any mistakes that will be noticed during this exercise, we will ensure that they're corrected. It's also a chance for those who may find that they need to transfer to another polling station because in the in-between period they have moved. It's also an opportunity for them to effect a transfer. But just a reminder that there will be no new registrations that will be undertaken during this period. Also, they're also able to check on the telephone code that we've given *214# for those that are living in Zambia on our three phone networks. And you can also check for your particulars on the commission's website.
Priscilla Isaac is the Director of Elections at the Electoral Commission of Zambia. She spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Equatorial Guinea and Gabon say they are expelling foreigners who do not have proper identification papers. The majority of those being expelled are economic migrants from around Central Africa. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzeka spoke to some of the migrants at the border town of Kiosi in Cameroon.
Several hundred people from Central African nations are stranded in southern Cameroon after being expelled from neighboring Equatorial Guinea and Gabon this month. The people complained that authorities in those two countries ransacked their homes, seized their money, and deposited them on the border at Kiosi. Some had only just arrived in those countries, while others had been living there for years. Bukari Zuli, a 45-year-old engineer from Chad, says his documents were taken and he is stuck.
C'était impraticable ici. Impraticable. C'était des pistes cacaoyères.
He says he is surprised that the government of Equatorial Guinea is chasing out the people who helped to transform many parts of the country from mere footpaths, forest and abandoned cocoa plantations into a developing country. He says he helped transform the capital, Bata, in the 15 years he was there. Gabon and Equatorial Guinea say they are expelling foreigners who do not have proper identification papers for security reasons, saying some migrants are engaged in illegal mining and criminal activities. Félix Ngelengele, governor of Cameroon's southern region, says the government is investigating.
We insisted that forces of law and order should have information on who was expelled and why was expelled. We took an assessment of all the control posts in the borders. We equally sent on the field a team to try to sensitize all the stakeholders.
Most of the people now stranded in Cameroon said they went to Gabon and Equatorial Guinea looking for work. The oil-producing nations have long been destinations for economic migrants. Nchama Teodoro is senior advisor to the governor of Wolentem, one of Equatorial Guinea's 9 administrative provinces. He says the global drop in price of oil and other commodities is taking a toll, and many companies are having to lay off workers.
Je pense dans chaque État, chacun essaie, n'est-ce pas, d'organiser, n'est-ce pas, sa population, que ce soit les jeunes, que ce soit les femmes.
He says Central African states should be able to provide opportunities for their young people who instead see Equatorial Guinea as the solution to their problems. He says Equatorial Guinea is helping to build Africa's workforce by allowing people to come and work freely, but that cannot be the only solution to unemployment. The International Monetary Fund said earlier this month that the rate of economic growth in sub-Saharan Africa is expected to slow to a 16-year low. Central Africa is feeling the slump, with countries reporting record increases in debt. Hundreds of Cameroonians have returned home after being expelled from Gabon. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Kiosi, Cameroon.
Twenty-one Zimbabwean women and girls who were allegedly abused in Kuwait after they were trafficked have arrived in the capital, Harare. This after getting air tickets from the Young Women's Christian Association International. The head of the young women's group, Nyerezaye Gambomzvanda, told reporter Marvelous Mlanga Nyahuye she was inspired to help after hearing the story on VOA Zimbabwe Studio 7's broadcast.
I'm pleased that the Young Women's Christian Association is an organization that is in Zimbabwe, that we decided that as women of Zimbabwe, as women in the world, we need to stand together. We need to support the efforts of other Zimbabwean women and the efforts of our government to address the issue of human trafficking. But to be practical about it, we felt it was not enough for us to just continue to raise awareness. Awareness is important, it's critical, but it is not sufficient unless we can prevent and unless all the girls who are trafficked are able to come back home. This is what drove me, and also that as a Zimbabwean woman myself and as a mother of a young girl, and also in my mandate as the African Union Goodwill Ambassador, I felt that it was critical that I stand up and be able to find some practical solutions and work together with others in making this possible.
What inspired you to make that move? Plenty of people read such touching stories, but they never get moved. What inspired you?
What inspired me essentially was an appeal that I saw on GoFundMe, an appeal that said, can you just, anybody out there, give your $5, give your $10, let's raise a ticket for one girl. And I felt, yes, actually we can manage to do this. We can manage to eat a little bit less. We can manage to save a little bit. We can manage to ask our friends. And then I was also inspired by the consistent media work that was happening, a significant work, including by yourself, including by His Voice of America, and also yourself as an individual. And that consistency, I felt that we needed to respond. I was also feeling that our embassy in Kuwait needs recognition. Every time we hear about Ambassador Marongwe, we get their phone numbers, they are public, they are announced, girls are encouraged to go to the embassy. We hear about his team, the team there at the embassy, people like Mr. Ngwenya. And so I felt that even amongst all the challenges that we have as a people, we also need to support those in government who are trying their best to make our girls come home, even if it's very, very difficult. And this inspired me, therefore, to know that actually as women, as people, as Zimbabweans, we can connect our multiple efforts and we can afford to bring our young women and our sisters to Zimbabwe.
Nyerezaye Gambomzvanda is the head of the Young Women's Christian Association International. She spoke with VOA reporter Marvelous Mlanga Nyahuye from Geneva. In South Sudan, residents of Yambil town are criticizing a recent decision by a local court to sentence five men to 6 months in prison for poaching wildlife in Inzara County. Wildlife officials arrested the men after they illegally killed wild animals. For VOA, Gift Friday reports from the South Sudanese capital, Juba.
The five men were sentenced to prison last week after they were found guilty of illegally killing antelopes, gazelles, and buffalo in Burekoto Game Reserve. Brigadier Jonathan Nyari is the director of the state's wildlife department and head of game reserves in Goodway State. He's speaking in Arabic. Nyari says all five were caught with illegal bush meat.
Those people who have already been put in prison, the five who were caught with the meat, they are charged. Each of them is sentenced to 6 months imprisonment. The guns have been handed over to the government, and the fine is 1,000 SSP. Each according to the court, they are now in prison.
Nyari says any person who kills any animal in game reserves without any authorization from wildlife officials is committing a crime and will pay the consequences. Last month, wildlife authorities announced they had arrested at least 50 suspected poachers during a one-month operation in the former Western Equatoria state. Nyari says this is the first time poachers are being sent to prison in Yambium. He hopes the verdict sends a strong message to other poachers. But some Yambi residents are criticizing the court's decision. Resident Kubako Emmanuel says he finds the news about the prison sentence discouraging.
Though we want to reserve our animal, but Yambio particularly is bordering with the Congo. On the other hand, those animals whom those people killed might have come from the border of Congo to the territory of Yambio, and they managed to kill them. So we are totally discouraged with what happened to those people, and we are saying, as citizens of Yambio, they should be tried and then they should be released.
Emmanuel says imposing fines on the poachers and confiscating their guns would have been a more appropriate punishment. Resident William Simon agrees that the poachers should have been fined and set free.
Our worry is that those people who have been sentenced to the prison have got children whom they are supposed to pay to the school. They have a lot to do. They have wives and a lot of their family members. So if they are just arrested like that, it will be very difficult for them actually to catch up with the life.
Simon says wildlife authorities should educate the local population on the importance of preserving wild animals.
You cannot sentence somebody who have just killed a small animal and then somebody killed a human being and you consider it to be a non-government. We need to know the difference between human being and animal.
A Yambio resident who wanted to only be identified as Charles has a different take on the poacher's arrest.
It's appropriate that they're taking the right decision because those animals are supposed to be protected and they can bring for us in some country. But at the same time also, I have my own reservation because we never know whether those poachers were arrested. Those animals that they killed, are they really from South Sudan or they are coming from the DRC?
Speaking in Arabic, Nyari encouraged residents to raise domestic animals rather than killing wildlife.
To all citizens, people should get to farming. Farming is good. If you have money, buy goats, buy chicken and rare. They will help you, but killing in the park is not helpful. Killing animals will not help.
Nyari says authorities in Maridi County are holding seven other suspected poachers who he says will soon appear in court. Due to rampant poaching in the area, Nyari says thousands of wild animals have been making their way to neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo and the Central African Republic. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
Karima Shipping Enterprise was recently announced winner of the U.S. Small Business Administration's 2016 Small Business Exporter of the Year for the New York District Office. It is the first time an African-owned business has received such an award there. Mohamed Osman is the founder and chief executive officer of Karima Shipping Enterprise, and he joins us live here in the VOA studios in Washington, D.C. Good afternoon, Mohamed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Peter.
Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Wonderful. Now, let me ask. I'm well, thank you. Mohamed, tell me, what does this award mean to you specifically and to your company, Karima Shipping Enterprise?
Thank you very much for this opportunity. First of all, I'll give a big thanks to the Small Business Administration for acknowledging my little effort that I've been putting in shipping. This award is a big challenge to me to improve my services and then to render better services. And this award also means a big challenge to my company to move from where we are to a different level. So I think we are working towards that, and we don't sleep over that.
Okay. Now, let's go to the basics. What made you go into the import and exports business in the first place?
I think when I came to the United States 12 years ago, you know, every African or every African over here like to ship something back home. So I also involved in that, shipping some stuff into my business back home. But I realized that there's a big challenge over there with regard to timing, reliable shipping agents or exporters. So I decided to do a little research on that to come out with Karima Shipping. So just recently, we converted into a corporation like last year. And through that, I was able to come out with Karima Enterprise, and then we're doing good, and then we make sure that everything is online. When we started, people were not really participating, but when they realized that we are doing the right thing, like UPS, USPS, or DHL, people started participating, and then lo and behold, not knowing that the Small Business Administration is looking at us, and then...
Well, wonderful. Let me ask you, so what are some of the things that you import or export?
We export everything that you can think of. Cars, furniture, household goods, anything you can think of. You want to export to Africa, particularly Ghana.
Oh, okay, so are there any plans of expanding this to other African countries or perhaps Europe?
Yes, of course. Globally? Yes, we are trying to use the social media and then this modern technology to differentiate our services from the rest of people who are doing door-to-door shipping or exporting, if I may put it. In this way that everybody can participate in our services. What we are doing right now is using the technology in such a way that you can place an order without even contacting any of us. On your cell phone, on your computer, we pick up your stuff, we ship it to wherever you want in other Ghana or Africa without even meeting anybody or meeting any of us. This is a different technology that Karima is using, whereby it can go to any village in Africa.
So let me ask you, what would you say has been some of the challenges that you had to overcome in order to ensure your business is successful and stays above the rest, as you put it?
Yes, the way we started is a whole lot of challenges. You know, we Africans, we have our own way of doing things. So our mind is set in such a way that it's hard to change us. But with time, when I came over here, I realized that there's so many things that we can do. And then people over here have adopted to the system over here. So we started putting things. Before we do things, we have to sign. We have to have an agreement. We need to see your ID. These are certain things that is not common in our society. But when we started, it was a challenge. People think we are trying to do things differently. But with time, they started to understand we are on the right direction and everybody is coming to us.
Thank you very much. That was Mohammed Usman, founder and chief executive officer of Karima Shipping Enterprise. He joined us live here in the VOA studios in Washington.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Good evening, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Let's begin with football. Senegal's Fatma Samba Diouf Samora has been appointed as FIFA's first female Secretary General. She succeeds the former Secretary General Jerome Valka, who was banned from football-related activity for 12 years. The 54-year-old Samora spent 21 years working for the United Nations and will start at football governing body in June. Samora's appointment, announced Friday at FIFA's Congress in Mexico City, completes a new look to an organization which has been dogged by corruption allegations under previous president Sepp Blatter. Blatter, who had led FIFA since 1998, stood down last year and was later suspended from football for 6 years for breaching ethics guidelines. On his appointment in February, Infantino said he would work tirelessly to bring football back to FIFA and FIFA back to football. Samora, who will undergo an eligibility check before her role is ratified, currently works for the UN in Nigeria and speaks four languages. In African football, Uganda have been disqualified from qualifying for the 2017 Under-20 Africa Cup of Nations for fielding an ineligible player. An offense occurred in the first round, a second leg match against Rwanda, which Uganda won 2-1 to secure a 3-2 aggregate victory. However, Uganda's Ahewa James had different dates of birth on his passport and his inter-club license. Although both dates placed James within the age limit for the competition, the rules state that both dates must match. Rwanda has been reinstated and will now take on Egypt in the second round. And in athletics, the World Anti-Doping Agency has declared Kenya non-compliant with regulations prohibiting the use of performance-enhancing drugs, jeopardizing the African nation's participation in the 2016 Rio Summer Olympics. Kenya's Olympics Committee says it will appeal the decision. Lenny Ruvuga reports from Nairobi.
Kenya passed a law in April criminalizing the use of performance-enhancing drugs and creating a national anti-doping agency to tackle the problem. The Summer Olympics are just 3 months away, and Kenya was trying to avoid a ban. But the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA, declared Thursday that the new legislation is not in line with its code. Kipchoge Keino, a member of Kenya's International Olympic Committee, told VOA they will appeal.
We're putting up an appeal, requesting the World Anti-Doping to consider Kenya. It's very sad. Around the world is that we're begging for the youth of this country to participate in the Olympics. It is a great loss for our youths if they don't participate. Those people who are behind these things should be action taken by the government of this country and also other countries in the world that we need a clean athlete participating in the Olympics.
Since 2011, more than 40 Kenyan athletes have failed drug tests. The International Association of Athletics Federations suspended 18 Kenyan athletes in January for doping. Kenya's runners typically dominate their events at international competitions. Philip Ngwano runs the 100 and 200 meters. He has been training for selection on the 2016 Olympic team.
It's completely crazy because they know for a fact that not every athlete is doping. We've been performing all this time without the performance-enhancing drugs. This kind of a bullying tactic. Kenyans are being bullied because, you know, the guys who are using, who have been using banned substances, why don't you go after them and their managers? Why ban the entire Kenyan team? That's absurd. You know, it's ludicrous.
Coach Peter Mushiri was among the sports officials who contributed to the drafting of Kenya's anti-doping bill.
I think we did our level best, and the recommendation was taken in. And what I don't understand is what actions are they complaining that were removed?
For the ban to take effect, the International Olympic Committee must ratify the ruling of the WADA board. Kenyan runners won 11 medals at the 2012 Summer Olympic Games, the most medals of any African country that year. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
And lastly, Serena Williams ended a nine-month title drought with a 7-6-6-3 win over Madison Keys in an All-American Rome Masters final on Sunday. Williams' previous title came in Cincinnati in August, a month before her attempt at a calendar year Grand Slam ended with a semifinal loss to Roberta Vinci at the U.S. Open. It was Williams' fourth title in Rome, and it comes exactly a week before the French Open begins. It was the first time two American women have met in a final on a clay since Serena beat older sister Venus in the 2002 French Open. The last All-American final in Rome was in 1970 when Billie Jean King beat Julie Heldman. Top-ranked Novak Djokovic is facing Andy Murray in the men's final of the tournament. And that's it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Now back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent. Enjoy. As I see your sexy face and your baby belly, tell I have to change my ways, I tell you, yeah. Give up, you carry belly for me, yo. Give up. Oh, you find no more wrong. But then your father is violent. Oh, let me tell you. Jumbo, we'll be fine, daddy. Oh, her body is black belt. She's a big character. Jumbo, I beg your bet for me. Oh, her father is violent. Oh, let me tell you. Jumbo, we'll be fine, mommy. Oh, her body is black belt. Jumbo, I don't get so no more. Kamaka, you know, Mama, you're a yo. If your papa no want us to marry, your woman, you. No, get up here for you, don't forget. The love I get for you, Mama, no go compare. Leave myself. Baby broke as long as you love me, girl I dare ya. Girl I dare ya. Girl I give up. Oh, no you find no more wrong. But then your father is violent. Oh, let me tell you. Jumbo. You define that you. Her body is black dot. She's a big character. Jumbo. I bet you better. Your father is violent. Oh, let me tell you. Jumbo, we'll be fine, mommy. Oh, my mother is black belt. She's a big character. Jumbo, I don't get so no more. Yeah.
money not there. People they carry me play. When money not there. Everybody run away. When money not there. Na na na. People they use me they play. Say when money not there. Nobody look at my face. Oh look up. The feeling, the feeling, the feeling, the feeling, the feeling the bar. The ladies, the ladies, the ladies, the ladies, they want in the bar. When we calling, it's good and good. Many, many people will be your friend. When money not there, people they carry me pay. When money not there, everybody run away. When money not there, na na na. People they used to the play. I say when money not there, nobody look at my face. Hey, you say me not the place.
Spend them for day. Oh, yeah, make good at all. No, up for my sister. Oh, yeah, once in a while, we're supposed to be jolly. Oh, yeah, young kulu, dance my sherry. Oh, when money no day, everybody a bubble some. I say, when money no day, I got you, I do, I knew. I broke it to my man. For we turn a bet, can I tell you? Tonight, you know, flavor to my yard. A very papa, one of my ass. When money no day, umu wan yon boss on. I say when money no day, I love you, but no, no. I treat it better than say, baby, if you want to touch you, we'll take on. Tonight, you know, flavor to my yard. A very papa, one of my ass.
The feeling, the feeling, the feeling, the feeling, the feeling, the boy. The ladies, the ladies, the ladies, the ladies, they want that to die. Well, I soon say when money not there, everybody run away. Nobody wants to stay. Just because money not there, no money not there, no, no. Everybody come my way, people that want to stay. Don't be me, you go to stay. When money not there, everybody run away. When money not there, everybody run away. I say when money not there, no, no, no.
Defend your fresh. You don't get it to the cell, yeah. Give me my cut or you go, yeah. Send me if it keep us in go. We are like that thing, that kind thing, if it won't pass in go. For the time go, we need to come go. Every night, all up, I bet ya. See mode on the beat, let's go. Free, oh, my love, so let me die, oh, with you, babe.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of The Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Good evening, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Here we go again. The International Criminal Court is back in the news with respect to the African continent. This time, it relates to the inaugural ceremony for President Museveni when the president of Sudan was invited. As you know, the president of Sudan has been under arrest order by the ICC. And in the ceremony, President Museveni referred to the fact that the ICC has reminded Uganda of the arrest warrant against the president of Sudan. His response was to say that the ICC is not a serious organization and that they represent a bunch of useless people. During the ceremony, Canada, the United States, and other European countries walked out of the ceremony on the grounds that Uganda has failed to arrest the president of Sudan, as they are required to do. The real question now is, what does the international community expect from the African continent? The Continental Organization, the African Union, after a long drawn dispute with the ICC, ordered its members not to deal with the ICC. In such a situation, what should Uganda or other African nations do? Should they ignore the advice of the African Union, or should they blindly follow the international requirement to turn over the president of Sudan to the ICC? The real question is, does the international community have any decent respect for the opinions and views of the African continent when they require that Uganda or South Africa or any other country ignore their organization's guidance? The issue for the ICC has been long drawn. After all the urgings by the ICC that they would refocus their attention, we still see that all they have to deal with today as in the past, African questions. The real issue we should also take into account in respect of the ICC is the crisis in the governance of international organizations. International organizations like the ICC must perform their duties with absolute integrity and independence. If this is not done, then we have a serious problem. The argument that the head of the ICC, that is the chief prosecutors in Africa, is beside the point. It is absolutely irrelevant. Therefore, when people want to support the ICC blindly, whether it is pro-ICC NGOs or governments, they must know that unless they ask for reform in the ICC, there will continue to be conflict between Africa and that organization. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. And from the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Michael Dubinsky, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, even the fall of a dancer is a somersault. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is committed to defending its allies and has deployed American forces in the Asia-Pacific against regional missile threats. Clearly, the biggest ballistic missile threat in the area comes from North Korea, said U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Arms Control, Verification, and Compliance Frank Rose. As recently as April 15th and 28th, North Korea carried out launches of intermediate-range ballistic missiles, which failed. On April 23rd, North Korea tested a submarine-launched ballistic missile, which also failed. On March 11th and 18th, North Korea launched its short- and medium-range Scud and Nodong ballistic missiles. North Korea has several hundred short- and medium-range ballistic missiles available for use against targets on the Korean Peninsula and Japan. Launches using ballistic missile technology are clear violations of multiple UN Security Council resolutions. The U.S. has its strongest missile defense relationship in the region with Japan. The U.S. deploys Aegis Ballistic Missile Defense, or BMD, ships and Patriot batteries in Japan to support the defense of Japan and U.S. deployed forces. Japan currently deploys four Congo-class Aegis BMD destroyers, is upgrading two Otago-class destroyers to BMD capability, and has plans to acquire two more Otago-class BMD ships. It also deploys 24 Patriot batteries along with its own extensive early warning radar network. The United States and Japan are working closely together to develop the SM-3 Block IIA interceptor. This development work remains on track for delivery in the 2018 timeframe. With regard to South Korea, the U.S. currently deploys Patriots to defend American forces and South Koreans. South Korea has also been improving its own missile defense capabilities with the Korean Integrated Air and Missile Defense System. The U.S.-South Korea alliance could benefit from more upper-tier missile defense capabilities to address the threat from North Korea's extended-range Scuds and Nodong medium-range ballistic missiles, said Assistant Secretary Rose. That's where the Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, or THAAD, system comes in. The U.S. and South Korea have begun formal consultations on the potential deployment of such a system. If THAAD is deployed in the Republic of Korea, it would be focused solely on defending against North Korean ballistic missile threats. The United States remains committed to defending its allies and forces in the face of North Korea's UN-proscribed ballistic missile launches and nuclear tests.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.